And
no.
Yes. Say it. Come on.
All right.
Man up.
Did you try dialing me up on Skype? Because I might actually have this whole thing worked out.
Okay, cool. Let me go check my Skype. And look for you.
Faith man up.
Contact. Start it.
This is a
there you are,
one.
Jimmy Dean. Let me call you on that. See ya.
Here, you hung up on you.
I hung up on him. I got him first.
You need a man up. Just start right here.
Oh, look at his picture. That is so...
I'm an dork. Kate, you start. Welcome to... Or, thanks for joining.
Thanks for joining.
As soon as he...
No, he's talking to me.
Yo!
Yo, Jimmy D!
How's it going?
Good, how are you? Okay, start it, Faith.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Faith Goss.
I'm Don Freeman.
And I am Scott Warren.
But who's the guy on the other end of the line? That's what I want to know, Faith Goss. Who
is
that guy?
That's our Southern California affiliate. Who is it? Who's on the other line?
Sausage Boy.
Wait, I got the wrong number. He was in my address book, Sausage Boy. I got to get Jimmy Dean.
Is that because you have not been hydrating and balancing your electrolytes properly?
It's because I'm a tubby little piece of skin with not a bunch of leftover parts grinded up in the middle.
Oh, we got some catching up to do, Sausage Boy.
It's been a long time since we've had JDF.
Last time we talked to him, he was on a bus on the Madden Cruiser.
Oh, that's right.
Coming back from his
face was on a billboard, I think, a moving billboard.
Welcome back, Jimmy Dean.
It's good to be back, guys and gal.
Well, you know, one of the reasons we're calling is because we've all just been experiencing some volunteer time at a 100-mile race. You were at two, Jimmy. You were at San Diego 100, and then you cruised on over to our neck of the woods and volunteered at Western States and have some exciting tales to share. Scott, he was pacing a runner. Faith was on safety patrol and put some miles through the canyon.
She's a safety girl.
She's a safety girl. And I was working at the river crossing. And there is no better stories and fun times to talk about than post-race.
Mm-hmm. So. And let me just say, if I was stuck on the trail in the weather that we saw out there and cute little Faith Goss wandered up to me, I would have felt a lot better.
You know, she did bring a lot of runners through that race. Do you know this was the race with a great overall percentage of finishers? And I attribute that to...
Do we know that for a fact?
I don't have any facts.
Well, that's true. You never do.
But I think Faith was like the Pied Piper, bringing them home.
The mice were just following blindly.
Yeah.
No, they did have the most under 24-hour silver belt.
Yeah, I did hear that.
Yeah. Or I guess not under 24 hours. So, yeah.
Yeah, the most silver buckle.
Mm-hmm. It was the highest number of silver buckles, which eclipsed last year's highest number. Last year was 133.
This was what, 146 or something?
146, yeah, I think so.
I there may be a correlation between Trail Runner Nation and number of silver buckles.
No, I disagree. I think it's a correlation between the Coca Pelli and the number of silver belt buckles. I did see a few of those out there.
Did you see any Coca Pellis out there, Jimmy?
I saw at least a couple, yeah, for sure. I didn't get to meet any of the Coca Pellis, so I don't know which Coca Pellis they were. Because most of them have stayed at our house on the way to Northern California.
Jimmy, I saw on a runner, Brad Sutton, who was a pacer, yeah. I saw a Coca Pelli on his cheek. You know, that's a pacer, a guy that will take all measures and costs to make sure you get through the race. He put one right on his face.
Yeah.
We had heard about the Mike Tyson style, but we had never seen it. Now we have. We've seen it all.
So let's talk about Western States. It caught a lot of people off guard, didn't it?
Most unprecedented weather in the 40-year history of the race.
So let's set this up. Last Saturday, not the race day, but last Saturday, record high temperatures. Mm. In the Sacramento area, the Valley area, it was 108 degrees.
Right.
So we're setting ourselves up for looking at a race that could be miserable.
Lots of carnage. Mm-hmm.
Lots of carnage. And then all of a sudden it did this global warming thing. Snap. All of a sudden it's like January weather, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us about it, Don.
I can only tell from pictures because I wasn't up top. But But I saw people as they were coming down telling me about how cold it was. They didn't have enough gear on. Some didn't. They were borrowing things from crew and trying to dress up.
We can start from Friday before the race. I was up in Tahoe at Squaw, and it was frigid. It was cold. It was 40-mile-per-hour winds. And that night, there was even an earthquake. Talk about an earth-shattering Western States, a foreboding sign.
Yeah, and Faith and I hung out in the weather at Robinson Flat for a couple few hours, and it just got worse, and it wasn't even the worst of it. I had jeans, shorts underneath the jeans, two dry fit shirts, a running jacket, a hoodie, and a poncho, and running gloves, and hypothetically waterproof shoes and high knee socks, and I was freezing.
What did the runners look like coming through there, Jimmy?
Popsicles. Some of them had blue lips, and they were all wet, and many of them were, some of them were prepared. Some of them brought the right gear for wind and rain.
It sounds like Kate just got home.
That's the Coca-Pelli.
Kate did just walk in the door.
I was trying to be quiet.
Mic her up.
No sneaking around, Kate. Go get yourself settled in. Get your comfortable shoes on and whatever you wear when you get home and get up next.
What if I wear nothing?
Well, that's fine too. But let me turn off the camera.
So continue.
Yeah, it was bad weather and not, I'd say 50% of the people made some last minute adjustments and got the right gear for those conditions. And many of the people who came from colder areas, not California, had, proper jackets and gloves and hats. But there were people wearing visors and people wearing no jackets, and everybody was soaked through and through. I heard there were 30 to 40 mile an hour crosswinds and sleet at Red Star Ridge. And a number of people went hypothermic and dropped out in the first 14 to 24 miles of the race.
Wow. And nobody, people that train for a 100-mile race, they're ready for 20 miles. Well, right? So that was some extreme conditions.
And what I was thinking was these poor people that we're looking at the weather the week before, and they're coming out maybe 4 or 5 days ahead of time to maybe acclimatize to the altitude or whatever. They're from West Virginia or across the ocean or something like that, and they may not have dressed for this kind of stuff. And so at the last minute, they're going to the ski shop and buying some parkas and stuff.
Yeah, it was pretty epic.
Yeah, it was definitely epic. Everything you can say. It was very cold out there. And then when I left from Robinson Flat to start my pace, my safety patrol duties, I found that runners were just into the next aids. Oh, bless you.
Bless you.
Sorry.
Jimmy, did you catch a cold up there?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about this cold weather, and I'm getting chilled.
Get some hot chocolate, Jimmy, and put your feet in a hot bucket of water.
I've actually got a cold beer right next to me.
Yeah, just runners were not, their muscles were very stiff. Their joints were very stiff. So then we started running into problems with, cramping. And people, obviously, when it's freezing out, you're probably not taking S-cap. So later down the road, we were running into some electrolyte issues. So the conditions just led to a very complicated race for some.
So, Jimmy, what were you doing there at first? Let's back up a second, because you said that a couple weeks back in San Diego, you were volunteering there or pacing there. What happened at San Diego 100?
San Diego, the Coyotes were manning an aid station that the runners came through twice at 31 and 36 miles. It was more Western States like in its weather. You had some high heat in the canyon there, and we were the hot aid station, so we brought a lot of water and ice and silly hats and tried to get as many people through there as possible. And then when we wrapped that aid station up, our closure time for mile 36 was 5 p.m., and we got the aid station torn down by about 6, and Kate and I headed out to pace Northern California ultra runner Joe Vandewater, who
oh, yeah.
supported me at Rio de Lago. Joe ran a leg with me there, so we were just trying to support him. And he ran a PR by about an hour and a half, and Kate and I cracked the whip on him a lot. He actually negative split the race and was very impressive in the wee hours of the evening. And
good job, Jimmy and Kate.
He went from about 30th overall around mile 62-64 to 11th, and he was committed to passing and not being passed, and we fulfilled on that commitment.
Yeah, he's a great athlete. That was a great day for him.
I think Joe was out on the Western States Trail this weekend too. I think I saw him.
He may have been helping Scott Smith, who was out there. Just a lot of good people running that race. And then Scott, you were doing some pacing too at Western States.
I was. I hooked up with a first time runner, Gus, and we had a good time. He was not prepared, although he was from this area. He was not prepared, and coming through those first few aid stations, he said coming along across Red Star Ridge, he said was just miserable because the winds were howling and they're up on the ridge unprotected. And he said by the time he got into, I think, where was the first crew access?
First crew access, Robinson. Duncan Canyon.
Yeah, okay, Duncan Canyon. He finally ran into his wife there who had a pair of gloves, and he said his hands, he couldn't open a goo packet. Mm-hmm. His hands were so numb. And anyway, he put those gloves on, and he never took them off. He came into Forest Hill where I picked him up and didn't take them off till the end of the race.
Wow.
He wore gloves the entire time. But he finished. I will say congratulations to Gus because he did finish. He had a goal time of finishing the race under 30 hours, and he beat that by 30 minutes. So congratulations to him.
I had to go ahead, Jimmy. I had an opportunity to work at an aid station down there at the river crossing, and I don't show up to an aid station to volunteer without just a thought in my head, maybe, just maybe, I'll get to run and help somebody out, you know. And I know you can volunteer and find somebody and get on that list early, but I wanted to get in there at the aid station and work there because that's fun too. But underneath my pants that I was wearing, I had my running shorts on. I had my technical shirt on underneath, my Trail Runner Nation shirt, in fact. And so I was ready to run, running shoes and the right socks, even hidden in my pocket, my GPS, my Garmin. I didn't want to make it people looking like I was a poser out there, so I had to hide my watch. And so in comes Eric Skadden through it, who's been on the podcast.
Yep.
And those in this area at least certainly know who he is. And he comes running through and he says, "Hey, Don, have you seen Lamont?" And I go, "No."
Who's Lamont?
You know, his pacer.
Oh, my gosh.
He says he was supposed to be up at Forest Hill. And so there was some kind of mix-up, and I'm not trying to throw Lamont under the bus, but this is my chance to get on the bus.
Probably because Eric went so Forest Hill so fast, he missed him.
It's probably the truth. And so he gets down. I said, "No, I haven't seen him." And he goes, "Oh, okay." I said, what do you need? You know, I'm thinking, hopefully a pacer, right? And he goes, "Yeah, are you okay to run 20 miles? I go, "Yeah, I can do that. Let's go." And so I drop my pants like I'm Superman inside of the phone booth.
I'd like to think Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm. I became a runner from volunteer to runner in about 10 seconds, ready to go. With my hydration pack on, I get to go across the river because it's a river crossing. I mean, how great is that, right?
And the river's freezing at this point.
It's cold. And so I'm going across on the rope, making my way. In the year that I ran states, I went in the boat. So now I finally get to fulfill my, you know, vision of going across this river. So I'm going across the river and coming across, and we get to the other side. And I said, "Well, I'm thinking, what have I got myself into?" You know, Eric is, even with 80 miles under his legs, I don't know if I want to mess with this guy, right? And so we start getting up on the other side, and guess who's there? Lamont.
Bummer.
Oh man, I'm wet. I had water up to above my waist, and I was ready to just run the last 20. I was a little bit disappointed and a little bit relieved. I was a little bit of both.
And so you had to cross back.
I got there was a guy who was rowing a boat across back, so I got in there. But I hopefully, because that's a photographic point. Hopefully, I'll be seen crossing the river as like I was pacing Eric. So even though I didn't have to run with him, I'm going to get the glory.
But you were out there till the wee hours. How late were you out there?
Five or six? Yeah, 4:30 or 5. We were there, and that's the best part of, mm-hmm. you know, you want to talk about working in an aid station where that's really, they all count, right? But it's pretty cool to see people that are there trying to fulfill this dream and a destiny, and you're, and you can provide not only some nutrition for them, but some words of some confidence, hope. Some hope,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and let them know what the course is coming up next, and they just listen to you like, they just hopefully just listen for some good advice and some good words. It's a lot of fun volunteering out there.
I think States is one of those days out of the year where, yeah, you're up all day and all night, you know, volunteering, and then you're up watching people at the finish line, and it's like you're not even up all night because it's so energizing. You never feel tired because yeah. you're just, the people around you are just working their tails off, and it's so inspiring. I just gained so much knowledge and just enthusiasm from watching everybody. Every single runner I went with this weekend was just one bit of inspiration. It was awesome.
What did you see, Jimmy?
Well, I was up there to support Jennifer Benna, one of the primary producer on Unbreakable, J.B. Benna's film on Western States.
Yes.
In 2010.
Every Trail Runner Nation member has that movie.
Yes. And in Benna family tradition, JB ran the race in 2009 and was sick as a dog on race day. Jen came down with the flu a couple of days before the race, and it sort of morphed a couple of times, and by Saturday morning she was pretty much a mess.
Oh no.
Very disappointing. I was sad for her in the sense that I know she's worked very hard to prep for this race, and she was in peak shape and could have made a very solid run at top 10 women. And on the other side, you know, that's kind of how life goes sometimes. And she started the race and pulled out at mile 14, appropriately so. She wanted to sort of test it out and see if she had the energy to do it, and knew that she didn't. So she made the wise choice and kept the bullets loaded in the gun, so to speak. So I know she's looking for another 100 miler to do now. And when that happened, I was going to make the best of a, you know, tough situation. And I jumped in to crew and follow and support six different coyotes in the race. And then, you know, I probably knew 100 other people in it. So started at Robinson Flat, worked my way to Michigan Bluff, went to Forest Hill, and sort of followed a handful of people along and tucked my head in with their crew to see if I could contribute anything, and if I could, I did. If I couldn't, I moved on. And got to see Timmy Olson finish.
That was amazing. I was
rooting for him all day long, and had mentioned to a couple of people that my two horses were Tim Olson and Dylan Bowman. I thought both of them were going to have solid days, and I even sort of joked with Krista, Tim's wife. I'm like, this is his day. He's going to win this. And I'm sure she had her suspicions, if you will. He really came into this primed and feeling good. And man, what a great guy. And it just felt really good to see someone that he's just good for the sport. He's the kind of guy that works really hard and is super humble and super generous. And we had a fun joke with his pacer, Hal Kerner, two-time Western States winner. That every time we saw Hal after the race, we're like, are you the guy that paced Tim Olson? And we were razzing him pretty much the rest of the weekend. And I got to high-five Tim a couple of times and then sort of tag along in his last mile and a half from Roby. And I'll post some video later. I got a video that's going to probably induce a few seizures.
Send that video to us, and we'll link it. We'll actually put it on the podcast.
We'll do. Yeah, got him finishing the race, and
let's talk about his accomplishment. I mean, this was a wacky year for weather, but let's talk about what he did.
Well, I mean, for starters, he trains in Oregon, so I can only imagine he's had a few days that look like what it looked like.
Yeah.
I actually believe that I saw him take the lead for the first time at Robinson Flat. Dylan Bowman, Tim, and Mike Wolf came in about the same time, but it was definitely led by Mike and Dylan and Tim just got in and out of the aid station in a heartbeat. And so he left about 30 seconds before anybody else. And as far as I know, that was the first time he had assumed the lead, because he was a minute or two back prior to that. And then there was a pack of 5, 6, 7 runners that were real close together. And Tim is a great climber, and I know that he really wanted to work the climbs to his advantage. And I believe he took over on the climb from El Dorado Canyon up to Michigan Bluff. And he came into Michigan Bluff solo, probably about a minute ahead of anybody, maybe 2 minutes. And the second time I got to see him was coming up Bath Road with Hal towards Forest Hill. And he had a smile on his face. And I kind of thought to myself, man, I hope he can downhill as well as he can climb, because there's so much downhill left. And Ryan Sands, a Solomon athlete out of South Africa, who won Leadville last year, gave him a darn good run on that Cal Street trail. And Ryan took the lead over probably around mile 70. But nobody knew, because those aid stations weren't updating. And Hal, being a two-time champion of the race, was able to tell Tim, you know, let him lead for a little while, let him sweat it out, that we're right on his heels. And Tim laid back for a little bit. And when they got to a climb right before the river, Tim hammered that climb and hammered the next downhill and was in the lead for the rest of the day, only to build on that lead. Finished 21 minutes ahead of Jeff Rowe's course record.
Wow.
That's amazing. 21 minutes off of a pretty fast record.
Yeah, 14:46. That time is, you know, that's just unheard of.
I think that's going to be there for a while.
Yeah, it's going to be there for at least 40 years until the next time we have sideways rain and sleet, 60-degree temperatures in the hot section of the race.
So let's talk about probably the bigger record that went down, the women's record. It was not only went down, it was spanked.
Obliterated.
Yeah.
More than 45 minutes.
50.
Off of Ann Treason.
And what year did she hold that record? Was that 1994 or something? I'm not sure.
Hang on, I'll confirm.
Would you confirm that? Ask Siri over there with your iPhone. What's Siri? Does she know anything about ultra running, Scott?
Siri, when did the Western States 100 record get set?
2 days ago, Scott. What are you, crazy?
She's thinking. Nah, screw it.
Yeah, I wish I was there to
1994. Would you like to search
the web for it? Thank you, Jimmy. Scott's over here in his own world. He didn't hear what you.
I heard
confirmed.
You. I heard you.
I'll whoop Siri any day of the week.
1994. Was the year that Ann Treason set the women's record.
You know, she if you look up Ann Treason on Ultra Runner sign up and look at all of the results that she's had.
Wow, she's still
she dominates the queen. She dominates the sport dominated so long. Mm-hmm. And people are still chasing her. Amazing.
But what an amazing athletic performance by Ellie Greenwood to come in like that. She is, you know, we've chatted with her in the past, and she is one of the nicest people. Of course, all ultra runners, I think, are very nice people, but she is just a down-to-earth, nice, humble lady. But I've seen some pictures of her out on that course, and she is determined. She She looks like an animal out there. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have that typical Ellie Greenwood smile. She's all business.
Talking about smiling, and I saw so many different emotions in those canyons, you know, just depending on, and it was cool to go on the roller coaster ride, not only through the canyons, but on the people's, you know, the different emotions that people were experiencing. And I think that was a really special part of the race, because I had never been out there before. And so when I hear Western States, you know, everybody talks about the canyons, and it was really cool to experience that. Not only for myself running through them, but with the emotions of the runners. So I thought that was really special.
You know, we talk about this race a lot and you know, hold it in such high regard. I hope that some of the nation members out there that, you know, may be trying to get in, get lucky, but also, you know, what a great vacation. Mm-hmm. You know, if you live outside the U.S. or even, you know, far away, you know, Western States takes a lot of volunteers, needs a lot of volunteers. As we just talked about, all four of us on this call volunteered.
Mm-hmm. There's 1,500 volunteers involved in the race.
For what, just over 400 runners?
Yeah.
And there's still need for volunteers. I know that there were, even to the last day on the Western States website, there were runners looking for pacers. So maybe this is a call to those out there. If we can get them excited about this race, that they'll come and show up.
Well, I think it's just not about Western States race, but all races. Anything that we talk about about this race, you can find at any other race, any place. You know, the need for a safety patrol, the need for a pacer, the need for a guy filling up a water bottle. And that's one of the things that I enjoy most about running a race is you're a king or queen, Faith, for that moment walking into their aid station. What can I get you? What do you want? Half ice, half water, half goo. You know, what is it that you need? Can I get you this and get you that? People are rubbing your neck, whatever you need. You know, they're just there to help you get by.
You know, I'm going to give a little anecdote here that I saw you at the aid station that you were at. My runner came into the river where Don was working, and my runner was pretty hammered by that time, you know, mile 68. And he had a cup of soup in his hand. Do you remember
78.
This? I'm sorry, 78. Uh-huh. He had a cup of soup in his hand, and he was trying to drink it, and he was still kind of a little shaky, and he dropped the cup of soup on the ground. And Don goes, don't bend over and get that. Let me get that for you. And I thought, you know, that's just classy volunteering.
Mm-hmm. Well, because you can't bend over at mile 78, pal. There's no bending over.
It's the only time you'll see Don Freeman class it up.
Oh, Jimmy Dean.
Let's talk about the finish line and how awesome that was to watch. I saw a lot of finishers come in. I was there between 2 a.m. and 11:30, just until the very end. And everything was really a great experience. But watching the hours between 29 and 30 come in was just, it was overwhelming.
Pretty heroic.
The last 2 hours are really special, but that last mm-hmm. hour is where it gets really gritty.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could see any group, first group, the 24-hour group, or the people trying to beat that 30-hour mark, which part of the race would you like to see, and in what order? Faith Goss.
I would say 29 to 30.
As your number one pick.
Yeah.
Number two.
And then the elites.
All right.
And then the middle. I don't know. I want to see them all. That's hard.
I would vary just a little bit. I would go, again, I would agree with Faith, to 29 to 30. Then I would go with the 24-hour finishers, and then I would go with the elites.
Because
I know that all the elites, there's going to be video online I can go see.
Ooh, smart. Don?
You know, those elites look about the same at the end of the race as the middle of a race, as the beginning of a race. You know, it's just easy for them. They run through. They come through and volunteering at that aid station. So I really didn't... I'm going to just kind of talk about your subject in this way. Those guys come through, and gals, and they don't need a lot of help. You know, they don't need, they know what they want. They either have a crew there that's handing them fresh bottles and out they go. They spend no time at an aid station. Very efficient, and no limping, no body parts that are falling off. They don't need any help. And then as the night progresses, you could just see that there's more and more opportunity to lend a hand. And those people, so much heart, they're out there just working to get it done. And it's so cool. I remember my first time I worked at an aid station. It was that very one, and it was some years back. And I just looked and marveled at every athlete. And I didn't care if it was first place or last, the last person through. I looked at them and I said, wow, I want to be like you. You guys are heroes. And, you know, now I've had a chance to run in some of those same races, but I still marvel at every one of them in the exact same way I did the first time. Anybody that's coming through, I look at them and I go, wow, I just want to be like you. And it's just so cool to see everybody that's doing it. I get chills thinking about it, talking about it, and watching it. And it doesn't matter that you've done it. You still admire everybody, regardless of their time. Just looking at the resolve on their face, that's who I want to be.
What about you, Jimmy?
I can get even more laser precise
than me.
You always have to
9:30.
You always have to one up your brother, don't you?
What was that?
You always have to one-up your brother, don't you?
I do. 29:30 to 29:59, followed by 23:30 to 23:59, mm-hmm. and then the elites. You know, there's that those cusps, those time frames to get under, and those people that are closing in on 30 hours might have been behind the 30-hour pace limit. Jason Healy, one of the Coyotes that was out there for the first time this year, second 100-mile attempt, first Western States, was a solid 20 minutes behind 30-hour pace about halfway through the race and about 5 minutes off of absolute cutoff, and just battled to get back in it and stay ahead of cutoff and finished in 29:51.
Wow.
And then that's Jose San Gabriel, who's a pretty well-known social media ultra runner, really just generous, awesome dude. He was 10 minutes behind Jason for a good period of time in the last 20, 25 miles. And with Jason finishing with 8.5 minutes to spare and Jose being 10 minutes behind him, right when Jason finished, I busted a butt back on the course to see where he was and try and help crack the whip. And he came in with 80 seconds to go.
Oh, my God.
That was the most amazing thing to watch.
Oh, yeah. And I bet you bigger cheers in the stadium for that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and the amazing thing about Jose is he DNF'd the race last year, having timed out at Devil's Thumb halfway through. So he had 2 years of history coming into this and just all sorts of desire to make it happen this year. And he was right on the cusp, and he had to fight those cutoffs for a long time. And the mental weight and physical strain of having to like push harder just to make it so you're allowed to continue when it doesn't look like you're going to make it. It's huge props to Jose and to Jason to get that done. And the last hour, the last 3 hours, Kate and I bounced between Highway 49, No Hens Bridge, Roby Point, and the finish. And at one point, we even ran up the trail at one point between 49 and No Hens to kind of cheer for every person on the course that was really grinding out that last, you know, hour. And we put on silly hats and made lots of noise and, you know, high-fived a handful of people to try and get them moving forward. And yeah, it's hard not to get emotional at the end, seeing them come around the track and knowing that they what they had to go through. Not even really knowing what they had to go through, but seeing how hard they worked to get that, you know, final few hours done under the wire.
And that's when I think the Tim Olsons and the rest of the guys up front, Ellie Greenwood, can look back and just marvel at those athletes that did work like that to get through and probably looked at them and thought, I want to be like you, you know, just tough and strong and endure. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, to draw a little analogy. You know, it's not like Tiger Woods looks at me golfing and says, I want to do like Scott Work and do on the golf course. But
he doesn't. I can verify.
You've never seen Scott swing. He's got a beautiful swing.
No, I'm just confirming that Tiger Woods doesn't want to be like Scott Walker.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm with you.
But you're right. You know, those elite athletes do marvel at some of those people that come in the very end of the race and think, you know, Timmy Olsen finished the race before many people even got halfway through with the race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that is accurate actually.
And you know one thing I've noticed?
He was done with the race before the Devil's Thumb cutoff time.
That's amazing.
Wow. And so Devil's Thumb is at what, 43.5 or something?
I guess it's almost like right at 50.
Just to kind of give reference.
Don't mess with Don. Don't mess with Don.
I'm probably wrong. Here's something I've noticed, and this is kind of just a general trail observation. Anybody that finishes before you, I don't care if it's one place before you, that runner is fast. That guy's fast, right? Anybody that finishes one right behind you, that guy is amazing and tough.
Tough.
Mm-hmm. How can he still be out there doing it longer than me, right? So everybody on either side of you, regardless of whether you are, is fast as heck or tough as heck.
You admire
every one of them. Yeah.
Admire all of them.
There, the line is drawn right at your finish mark. Oh, Jimmy went offline. What did he do? He's trying to connect to us. Well, let's talk about Jimmy until he gets on with us again.
You know, one of the things that I absolutely love about Western States, and especially pacing or even running through the night, is there's a section that we call Cal Street that goes from Forest Hill down to the river. And there are four aid stations down to the river. And they are the most fun aid stations because you're coming down and all of a sudden you can hear in the distance music and talking. And then you stop hearing it because you go around a corner and all of a sudden it gets louder and it gets louder. And as you get closer, all of these aid stations have, you know, lights and some of them have Christmas lights. And it's just, it feels so cool to come into those aid stations. And then you finally come into Rucky Chucky. And I got to say this. Rucky Chucky looks like a portable city. That aid station looks like a portable city. There were probably, 50 volunteers there?
Yeah. Wow.
Or more. The pop-up tents, I bet you there are 20 pop-up tents. The buffet table is longer than any of the aid stations. It's just amazing.
Really?
I'll tell you what. I've got to do some serious training because I don't know how much time I spent out there, but I was easily putting down 1,000 calories an hour.
Speaking of amazing calories, first time, maybe it's not the first time, but the first time I've ever had this on an ultra race, at the Rucky Chucky River Crossing, they were making breakfast burritos.
Oh, that's what I heard.
And they were amazing, Faith.
Yeah.
Best breakfast burrito I've ever had in my life.
I did.
I had two.
That's awesome. I looked forward to, I knew there was grilled cheese at Last Chance. Mm-hmm. I got grilled cheese, and then I did, I've never done this when running, and I've always heard of it, obviously, is paydays. Many paydays.
We had a plate full of paydays.
Yeah, that's all, when I first started running, that's what I used, because I couldn't afford goo.
Yeah, they're good. I ate paydays, like, all day.
I watched those breakfast burritos being made and contributed. I saw the secret.
Mm-hmm. What was it?
What was it? Goo?
It's salt? A secret. Goo in there.
No. That's the only way that I'll eat boiled potatoes with salt is in that breakfast burrito. Mm.
You know, I think the reason I had 1,000 calories an hour is because when we get in front of an aid station table, we're conditioned to eat. And so I'm standing, just because I'm standing facing the other way doesn't mean I don't keep eating.
Your brain
doesn't know that you're not running the race. It's just being told, There's food on the table, eat it.
Yes. Oh, you like that, and you like that, and you like that. And so all I did was walk back and forth and just sample. Easy 1,000 calories an hour.
Oh, that's funny.
Jimmy Dean, are you back with us?
I am.
Oh, man, we missed you. And I don't know if you heard the things we said about you, but you'll have to listen to the podcast to find out.
They were probably all true.
So Jimmy, you talked about a couple of your Coyote members that finished. How did the rest of the pack do?
Well, we had... six members of the club, two of the six being presently remote. Craig Slagle now lives in Vancouver, and Gabby Schenkel lives in Switzerland.
Oh,
they both used to live in Los Angeles and train with us. And Gabby had some IT band problems and pulled out at Forest Hill, and was the only one of the six to not finish. Craig Slagle finished, was his 12th or 13th 100-mile finish and his second Western States finish.
Nice.
And the rest, I believe, were Western States first-timers. Jason Healy finished in the aforementioned 29:51. Helen Wu was a finisher at San Diego 100 last year, finished her first Western States. And most notably, Katie DeSplinter.
Yeah.
And she's an inspired race. And at mile 62 was right on the 24-hour cusp. And Katie is a great climber, and downhilling isn't necessarily her strongest suit. And I know she complained a little bit of having some knee pain on the down when she... I was worried, and she absolutely dug in and did everything that there was to do and was the second to last 24-hour, sub-24-hour finisher, silver buckled.
Yeah.
The amazing thing about that was I think they were 13 or 14 buckles, silver buckles short. And Western states, in an amazing tradition, everyone who had silver buckled previously volunteered to not receive a buckle on Sunday at the award ceremony, so that every first time silver buckle recipient could get a buckle that day.
That is so cool. You know, that speaks to not only Western states and the organization, but the ultra running community. You know, everybody, I bet you they didn't have to ask anybody twice. I bet you, oh yeah, but that was a natural,
I bet you
yes.
didn't even have to ask. I bet you people were just volunteering. Here, take my buckle.
People just volunteered. And the great thing was we had one more coyote, or a very close friend of mine that trains with me a lot, Eric Wickland. And it was his first Western States. Eric paced me the last 20 of Western States in my only States run. He paced me at Badwater. He paced me at the Angeles Crest 100. He had an inspired day, and Eric ran 1836 and absolutely obliterated the second half of the course. So
1836?
That's
1836. Good for 30th overall.
Wow.
And I saw him at Forest Hill, and when Jen pulled out, it was my intention to follow Eric for the rest of the day. And him and I are good buddies and friendly rivals, and we're constantly trash talking and taunting each other. And we run Miwok together a couple of times. And Eric comes into Forest Hill, and I sort of get right in his face, and I'm like, Eric, did you see who came in before you? He said, no. And a really awesome Northern California runner by the name of Carl Hoagland had just come in. And I said, Eric, every single time you've run a race with Carl Hoagland, he has finished exactly one position in front of you. Do not let that happen. Carl is a great downhill runner, as is Eric. Eric chased after him for the next 31 miles. Eric picked Carl off in the No Hands Bridge aid station. They had a spirited exchange, and Eric ran the last few miles solid and was able to outpace Carl by a few minutes.
You know, in races, you need to come up with something along the way to motivate you and keep you moving forward, to give you a reason to push hard. And sometimes the clock does it for you because you're on the cusp and you're trying to break your PR or that 24 or that 30-hour mark, whatever it might be. But you need things like that, I think, to help push you along and crack that whip. Besides a pacer, it's awfully nice to have an additional goal that keeps you going when you'd much rather walk or sit a little bit longer in an aid station. There's no time for that when you have, you know, an additional goal around you.
Exactly. And we'll use friendly, encouraging methods. We'll use whip cracking methods. We'll use downright mean and evil methods, whatever it is to get you to move faster.
Jimmy Dean, we have a race coming up, don't we?
We do.
Angeles Crest. Now that States is behind us, we get to put ourselves at the start line and run down and up and down your San Gabriel Mountains. And I'm hoping, as we've done up here, which was provide some nice cool weather, I know a bit too cool because maybe we tried a little too hard, but I expect the same type of treatment for the Northern California group coming down to your Southern California to run. So I'd appreciate not so hot like last year.
I can promise you with 99.73% probability that it will be as hot or hotter than last year.
Oh, well, thanks, Jimmy. At least you're not pulling any surprises, you know, a guy that does, at least you're being upfront and honest with what's going to happen. So I'll continue sleeping in my altitude chamber inside the sauna for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, and unfortunately it probably won't do much because it's a unique combination of altitude, dry air, high winds, and heat. And man, the saying is we don't run Angela's Crest. Angela's Crest runs us.
And we talk so much about, you know, the Western States run, and we're kind of talking up AC right now, but there isn't a single race out there that doesn't have its own character. And the character is built not only by the course itself, but by the volunteers. And if you think your race isn't quite as up as it should be, get out there and volunteer and bring it up and set the bar and create a crazy great aid station. And then the next aid station, we'll try to match it next year. And that's how it all happens, I think.
Let's do, I just had a thought. Let's do one quick round robin, a quick snippet. What was the one thing this past weekend that you were most inspired by or that you learned? Got that? Who wants to be first?
Well, you, Scott, because you got to give us time to think. You probably,
I've been thinking today. And here's what it is. Last year I ran, and Don paced me, and he kept saying a phrase that I was able to give back to my runner this year, and that was, you got to take it when the trail gives it to you. And I kept on telling my pacer that as we came to an easy part of the trail, a down or a flat, I said, Gus, let's take it when the trail gives it to us. Let's go. We can, you know, maybe walk an uphill here and there, but I said, it's given it to us. This is a gift. Let's take it. And that was my favorite part of this past weekend.
Get to see it in action.
I got to pay it back.
Yeah, there you go.
I think my favorite part was meeting people from all over the country that made the pilgrimage.
And world.
Yeah, and all over the world. But I met and ran with a guy from Scotland. And I ran
They have
with...
some great races over in Scotland, don't they?
So I've heard.
And I ran with a woman from Chicago. And I just met, I met somebody from Southern California that I referred to the Coyotes. And so...
Does she get a commission for that, Jimmy?
She gets more than a commission.
So I was great meeting people from all different walks of life coming, making the pilgrimage to Squaw Valley and then, you know, on the way to Auburn. And I was just, it was amazing because we're all coming from different parts of life, but we all have something in common. So it was really cool.
My takeaway, my wife, Janet, refers to it as the green fog. She goes, oh, Don, you've been breathing in that green fog again. And that's when I get around that race environment that I knew part of my training strategy for this upcoming race for AC was I had in there volunteering at Western States because I knew that was going to help me with my next runs and getting excited and just breathing it all in so that I can breathe it all out. It's just awesome. And I love being around the race, and it makes me want to run, and it makes me want to train, and it makes me want to get down to Jimmy Dean's San Gabriel Mountains and run on those. So that's my biggest takeaway. Just everybody, their attitude, the volunteers volunteering it, and the runners running and the course just laying out there saying, this is the best of me. Come have it. Mm-hmm. So Jimmy Dean.
There were two pieces that sort of equated to the same thing. Piece number one was seeing Tim Olson in the 14th hour, running his way towards the finish line. And he had his head up, he had a smile on his face. And in dialoguing with him, he said it hurt a lot, but his body didn't fail him. Hmm. On the other side of that, I saw Jason Healy behind the 30 hour cutoff and fighting those absolute cutoffs. And seeing Jason towards the end of the race, he says, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. Nothing has ever hurt more. And yet there he was, still battling, still grinding towards that finish. And he walked away with a Western States buckle. And what I was left with is, it doesn't matter how fast you're going or how close to the cutoff you are, that you give it your all every step of the way until you can't. And the idea that I'm going to have to apply that to Angeles Crest scares the crap out of me.
You know, I think we need that as humans. I think life gets too easy for us sometimes. I think we need to push ourselves into that pain, into that uncertainty. I think we need it to live, to live life maybe in some aspects the way that we're intended to live and intended to be able to endure. And those hardships are what our ancestors have gone through. And we need to, you know, do it as well. And the closest we can get to it because of our soft world lately is to put ourselves in a marathon or further and push hard and prove to ourselves that we're survivors. And, you know, as humans, we can do it.
Your marathon comment reminded me of that. One of the shirts I saw this weekend was, "Oh, you've run a marathon. How cute."
That's good.
Well, Jimmy Dean, thanks for coming on the podcast with us tonight. We need to get more of Jimmy Dean on this thing.
We need to get more of Kate.
Yeah, where
we
was
need,
she?
Did we
she,
need to talk yeah, about you, that.
You definitely need to get more of Kate Martini Freeman. That adds more of the appropriate female vibe to this dialogue.
Was she sitting here listening to your podcast? Does she have anything to contribute? What she took away, or what she's looking forward to, or what she thinks about her big run coming up at AC? Because there's going to be three Freemans on that course. There's going to be yourself, myself, and Kate.
So actually, 3.5. Stan Kozowski is married to my sister, Mary Freeman.
Oh, I thought you just let the cat out of the bag that there was a new Freeman on the way. She was running 4.5 months pregnant. That's a heck of a way to announce it, Jimmy Dean. Let me tweet that out. Kate's running pregnant at AC.
No.
So what was your experience at Western States? We'd like to hear from you.
Well, I mean, I had been up there to crew a few times, and I was up there to crew, and then the person I was crewing ended up having to drop at Forest Hill. I was really, really, really proud of her from getting to from Michigan Bluff to Forest Hill, however, because she actually wanted to drop at Michigan, and she pretty much only went because of her crew. So that was really cool to see that fight and to see how well she took it, and then to see her back out at the finishing line. You know, that's one of the many things that makes this sport great is she was out there, you know, to see everybody else and, you know, congratulate people and support people and get the good vibes. And she wasn't wallowing, and I'm sure you have your moments, but it was great to see that. So, you know, much of what you guys said, it's just an amazing thing to see the creation of what happens over those miles and, you know, how people deal with the cards that they're given and the fight. It's pretty awesome.
You know, I have to interject here as you were saying that, Kate, I was just thinking, those people that did not finish, that had to drop out or didn't make the cutoffs, they've probably gone through more internal, physical, mental struggles than most of those people that finished. And so they're heroes in their own right, regardless of where they dropped. If they dropped at 14, if they dropped at 5, they didn't drop and, you know, on a whim and say, you know what, this just isn't my day, I'm going to quit. They worked, yep, and they went to probably a further out extreme and taking their bodies to a point of exhaustion more than most of those people that finished. So they're heroes also.
Good point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just starting, you know, it's a huge thing. Just signing up is huge. What am I kidding?
Just getting in is huge.
Yeah, that comes from the man that can't seem to get into that race.
Yeah. I'm 0-5 in the lottery. Come on.
0-5? Come on. Oh. You know what? You need to petition that. I'll sign your petition, Jimmy Dean.
Here's the thing. This coming year, I'll have 4 tickets in the lottery, and there will be a certain percentage of people in the 4-ticket pool that will not get selected. I think I am a non-selected elite. And I hope that I continue to not get drawn until like I'm the only person in the 17-ticket pool.
17 tickets.
Yeah.
Well, Kate, you sound like you're in shape. I can hear it over this Skype line. You sound
make it till I make it. That's my plan.
You sound like you have your VO2 max right where it needs to be. You've got the body fat percentage right where you should be. Your resting heart rate sounds low.
Thanks, doctor.
Yeah, that's all the way across on the Skype line. I can get a lot of that information. We're an aid station worker can tell you anything about your physiology, about the course. Do you know that aid station workers are actually just the authority on just about anything?
They're clairvoyant.
They're clairvoyant. They'll tell you you're almost there. It's only downhill from here on out.
Just over that hill.
You've done the hard part. Well, thanks so much for coming on to Trail Runner Nation and to our podcast. Joining us at We Are Nation. Joining the Coyotes.
On Twitter.
On Twitter. And joining the Coyotes at Jimmy.
CoyoteRunning.com.
At coyoterunning.com. See, I will go in and edit your part of your voice out. It won't even sound like anything. And over on Twitter at...
We already did that one.
Jimmy Dean?
Twitter.com/coyoterunning.
at twitter.com/ at Coyote Running. So go out and run, Moss. All right, Jimmy Dean and Katie.
Thanks.
Thanks so much.
It was nice to meet you.
Oh, yeah, you guys finally hooked up.
In reality, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next, I guess I'll be seeing you in a few weeks. Look forward to it.
A few weeks, 24 days.
Yeah. And if you want to get a podcast somehow going down there, that would be cool.
Yeah, let's definitely set that up.
Hey, Jimmy, I just want to warn you, and Don's going to kick me for this.
I'm going to hang up on him right now.
I am warning you. My friend Don is screaming in screaming shape right now.
Oh, I'm not going to be the second Freeman at Angel's Crest. I promise you that.
Well, I'm telling you right now, I'm throwing it down because Don wouldn't throw it down on his own because he's too humble. But
Don's going to have to run 21 something to finish in front of me. So good luck, Don.
He's sub 20.
Oh no, I'm not sub 20. I will say this, Jimmy. I do have a few years on you, right? I'm a little bit older. I think I should get a little, you're gonna spot me an hour or so.
Some wise points.
All right,
I just want you guys to know that I'm gonna be the first female Freeman. Just to let you know.
That's a guarantee.
That depends on if Don takes a nap on the side of the trail again, because I'm going to call him the first female Freeman if he's laying on the side
again?
Of the trail.
Now you're starting to throw a little trash around. Hey, Kate, I have my wife coming this time, so you don't have to, yeah. give me aid and lights and rescue me at every aid station that I so didn't adequately prepare for.
Well, that's cool. Just tell her to make you comfortable on your nap so I can pass you.
Ooh. Okay,
it's fine.
You've thrown it down. It's on like Donkey Kong. Is that what we're supposed to say? Yeah. All right, see ya.
Bye.
Take it easy.
Bye. Thanks for joining Trail Runner Nation. Find us on Twitter at We Are Nation. On Facebook, where are we on Facebook, Scott?
Trail Runner Nation.
And trailrunnernation.com.
Yep. Hey, go out and run Moss. In 10 minutes I'll be laying on the floor, like I need to defend my own innocence. So what I did it, I admit it, and I'm pleading the fifth. One more anthem for the know-it-all. I won't be standing up alone. I better learn how to crawl, learn how to crawl. In 10 minutes I'll be laying on the floor. Description, I've been starting to fit. 3 to go, and I'm forgetting all that I have known.